Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Mike Florio.
Let's bring in Mike Florio here. Joins us on the program.
NBC Sports.
All right, Florio, I know you're probably busy.
Pro Football Talk.
Starts the day, he ends the day with Pro Football Talk. He is Mike Florio.
Within moments, a long national nightmare is apparently coming to an end.
I don't know what you're talking about.
If Justin Fields can't beat out Andy Dalton, what the hell were they doing trading up from 20 to 11 to get it?
Go to hell with your big brain, ladies and gentlemen. Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio.
Mike Florio with Dan Bernstein and Leila Rahimi.
How are you, Mike?
On the Score.
Let's talk football with Mike Florio. He's at Pro Football Talk, NFL analyst, NBC Sports, ProFootballTalk.com. With us on the Score Hotline, brought to you by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Mike, you are breaking some news as we speak. Your sources confirm that when he was general manager of the Washington football team, Bruce Allen, who has had his ass in the jackpot of late, exchanged more than 1,000 emails with NFL counsel Jeff Pasch. What do you know, and what's the significance of this?
Did you say he's had his ass in a jackpot?
Yeah, there was an umpire, a baseball umpire, who used that phrase, and I just love it.
My dad always referred to getting yourself into some sort of specific trouble as a jackpot, and I could never reconcile that with a slot machine, because a jackpot is good. So I'm always confused by that term, and I always think of my dad, because he always would say, you're going to get yourself in a jackpot. And if he were alive today, given the extent to which I am pushing this issue, he would be saying to me repeatedly, and I'm looking at a picture of him right now as I say this, you're going to get yourself in a jackpot.
Yeah, I will look it up, but there was an umpire who was saying, like, I'm not going to get my ass in a jackpot over this, but it was back in 2016, so I'm sure it's there's got to be a derivation from somewhere. I will research it.
So here's what I know. And this is surprising to me, because yesterday the NFL, at a time when they would very much like this to all blow over and die down, and most of the media is complying with their request, when there are so many unanswered questions out there, and I've only scratched the surface on the questions I've asked, and I was curious about this 650,000 email trove that is out there somewhere that is kept secret, except when it isn't, obviously, as John Gruden can attest. Where did it come from? What's in it? I wanted to know that, and I also wanted to know, once they started finding these offensive and inappropriate emails, did they start looking at text messages? On that point, they said they didn't, which is ludicrous to me, because the text messages are where the real action is going to be among people who would use ridiculously offensive terms in emails. But as to the 650,000 emails, they told me that they all came from Bruce Allen's Washington football team account, messages sent to and from Allen over a 10-year period. I mean, that's 178 per day sent or received by Bruce Allen, which is an astronomical amount. And I've separately learned that more than 1,000 of those emails were exchanged with Jeff Pasch. The NFL didn't confirm or deny the number. They just tried to downplay it, saying, well, that works out to 2 per week. Well, okay, fine, but what do they say? Because we've seen contents of some of them. I don't know how many were given to the media. There could be more that are problematic, so why not release all of them? And obviously one of the reasons why they're not releasing all of them is because of the 1,000 emails that were sent to and from the NFL's general counsel, who has a fairly direct role in deciding what does and doesn't get released.
That's my question, is when it comes to all of this, what is his responsibility here to the NFL, given the role he had at the time?
Well, he's got a conflict of interest, clearly. And if this were a public situation, at some point you'd have a special counsel appointed, because the attorney general slash general counsel slash consigliere is hopelessly conflicted, because he's the one that has a problem. And, you know, people speculated from the get-go that this was all about protecting Daniel Snyder, and I said, well, it's also about protecting the other owners who may find themselves in a jackpot like this, to keep the term rolling. But also, Jeff Pash is protecting himself. Because when you bury all of this stuff, and think about the reasoning they've provided all along, we can't release any of this information because some of the current or former employees of the Washington football team provided information to us with a specific request of confidentiality. And setting aside the reality that that isn't a good enough reason to hide it all because you can redact names, if that's true, they also told me that these 650,000 emails had nothing to do with the workplace misconduct investigation. So your reasoning for hiding the information doesn't apply to these emails by your own admission. It's another reason why more people should be banging on the drum, because there's something here that they're hiding, and it's becoming more and more obvious, and they're just hoping that we let it go and move on and pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. The great and powerful Oz has spoken.
Closer to home, we have two former Bears who have a presence in the media who now find themselves in public spats with current players. One is our friend and colleague Olin Krutz, who decided to say on these airwaves that his immediate feeling on Aaron Rodgers just saying, I own you, I've always owned you, is I want to punch him in his face. And then Aaron Rodgers is mad about that, saying, I reacted and now I got to deal with this. On the other hand, Lance Briggs noticed that when he called out Eddie Jackson for poor tackling, Eddie Jackson shared a 2011 PFF tweet about missed tackles by Lance Briggs. Last night, again, on these airwaves, our colleague Lance Briggs had to say, yeah, I missed a lot of tackles. I made a bunch of tackles, too. That was near the end of my career, et cetera, et cetera. What do you make of former players versus current players? What the rules are of these silly skirmishes and how people get drawn in?
Well, I think it's fascinating when it happens, because former players can speak to these issues with a greater degree of credibility. Now, Olin Krutz wanted to punch Aaron Rodgers in the face. Look, if we were going to make a list of all the people that wanted to punch Aaron Rodgers in the face, and if it was alphabetical, Olin Krutz's name wouldn't come up for a very long time.
I thought frankly. You were going to say all the list of people that Olin Krutz wanted to punch in the face. As someone who's been on
both.
It, I know.
I think both. I suspect that I'm on the list of people that Krutz wants to punch in the face and the list of people who would like to punch Aaron Rodgers in the face. I'd be cross-referenced between the two. But when you've got a former player who is providing analysis to help fans understand how the game works, I think it's a little lazy and evasive by a current player to say, well, you stunk too, basically. How dare you point out that I stink because you stunk too? And it reminds me of the fight that went down earlier this week between DK Metcalf and Shannon Sharp, because Shannon Sharp was calling out Metcalf for not getting out of bounds late in the Steelers game and trying to be a hero and score a touchdown and compromising the ability of the team to tie the game. And Metcalf was disrespectful to Sharp, and ultimately I think Metcalf cried uncle because he realized that Sharp has a Hall of Fame resume. But I think it's great when former players don't sign on to what Howard Cosell used to call the jockocracy, where they have this unwritten rule that they have to never say anything bad about anybody who's currently playing, and they have to support them all they can. I think it's good when people who, and those are the best analysts, the former players who are willing to call it like they see it, especially if they're substantively accurate when they're doing so.
I am trying to figure out how to feel about the Sean Taylor jersey retirement ceremony. And I want to know your thoughts about how the team went about it. Later in the week, the president of the team comes out and says, we messed up. The day of, there were issues just where people were standing. What was your take on all of it?
Well, as my friend Big Cat likes to say, and I think he's accurate, dysfunctional teams do dysfunctional things. And to the extent that we believe that changing out players and people in key positions, coaches, executives, presidents, that suddenly makes the team non-dysfunctional, you still have the same owner. So no matter how many new people come in and accept employment with Dan Snyder, it still starts with Dan Snyder. And there were two explanations for the late notice for the Sean Taylor jersey retirement. One, they're just horribly inept, and they didn't realize that there would be fans who would like to know about it. And also, they could sell extra tickets to the game because they'd want to come and be at the game when Sean Taylor was honored. They deliberately held it until 3 days before for some reason that makes no sense to me. Either that's true, or it was a quickly thrown together reaction to the email scandal and, hey, look over here, bright, shiny object, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, we're honoring Sean Taylor today. So neither explanation is good. I typically err on the side, especially when we're dealing with a chronically inept organization like Washington, I will choose incompetence over deliberate, sinister motive because they're not good enough to pull it off. So I'll just assume that they did plan to do it all along and that they stupidly bumbled their way through the events leading up to it and the events of the day because that's what they do.
Something I had on my list for you was the end of the Dallas Cowboys overtime win and CeeDee Lamb high-stepping into the end zone while not so, subtly waving the ball in the face of the defender. So I'm thinking, wait a second, if we actually look at the textbook rule book definition of taunting as currently being adjudicated directly in a defender's face, unnecessarily, etc., even though it's during the play, could that or should that have been taunting? And if so, would it negate the touchdown? I don't know how deep a dive you've done, but I just thought that was a jumping off point for some pretty real questions.
Easy answer. It would not negate the touchdown because even if it happens during the play, it's a penalty that applies after the play. College football adopted the rule a few years back where if you taunt on your way to the end zone, touchdown comes off the board. It doesn't happen in the NFL. And because the game ended, it didn't matter. I think that the truth will come this weekend when we go through this bizarre ritual of the NFL will let you know who was fined or whether someone was fined if you say the magic words. You have to ask them, was CeeDee Lamb fined for taunting on the final play of the overtime win over the Patriots? And if you ask the right question, they'll say yes or no off the record, even though they're the ones you're asking. And they often will leak that information directly to the reporters that are on their payroll. But that's the ritual. Every Saturday, you begin to get the information about who was and wasn't fined if you ask the right question. So that's when we'll find out. My guess is he would have been fined. He should have been fined. And it doesn't matter because the game's over. If the game hadn't been over, it would have been a penalty that should have been called. And, you know, maybe the explanation is they just didn't bother to throw the flag because the game was over. At the end of the Vikings-Panthers game, K.J. Osborne ripped his helmet off and paid homage to the Minneapolis Miracle and threw it into the air, and he should have been flagged for that. But the game's over, so there's nothing you can do about it.
Well, at least perhaps there is some reason being applied to this, and that permeates. Baker Mayfield, I think, bought himself as much time as he possibly could, but I saw that Case Keenum is finally going to be the one starting on Sunday.
And Baker's comments from yesterday were just baffling to me. The idea that he thinks that he has some sort of a birthright to continue to play as long as he wants to play, and it's exclusively his decision as to whether or not he can do it. And it's up to me, and anyone who would say that my performance is hindering the team while I'm trying to play through this injury, that's not right. Well, it is right, and it's accurate. And at some point, your starting quarterback's health dips far enough below 100% that it makes more sense to go with a 100% fully healthy backup. Case Keenum has been very good. It's been in spurts, and most notably in 2017 when he was with Kevin Stefanski, the coach of the Browns, in Minnesota. Stefanski was the quarterback's coach there. They went to the NFC Championship game. Keenum was phenomenal that year. So at some point, Keenum healthy is better than an injured Baker Mayfield. And, you know, I understand that Mayfield is very stubborn. He's very confident. He's got a lot of that swagger to him. But at a certain point, you got to protect the player from himself. And it looks like the Browns made the right decision. He may not be happy about it. And he also hasn't gotten a second contract yet. And this is another reason to wait to pay him, because we saw what happened with Jared Goff and Carson Wentz. If the Browns give Baker Mayfield $35 to $40 million a year, they may be regretting it. And to spin this fully forward to next year, some of these veteran quarterbacks that are looking for a Tom Brady type of a situation, how can they not be looking at Cleveland and looking at how they're loaded everywhere and arguably a great quarterback away from being a short-list Super Bowl contender? If I'm Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson or any other veteran quarterback looking for a new place, I would definitely be looking at Cleveland.
Mike, to let you go, I will tell you, I tagged you on Twitter as I shared from July 5th of 2018 what has to be the definitive history of the phrase "in the jackpot" or "ass in the jackpot" by no less a writer than Timothy Burke, who is one of the former Deadspin editors who's still doing terrific work. And he traced it all the way back to the times of slavery, but it ended up becoming popularized through the Baltimore police culture. So I don't know if your dad had any connection or any dealings with it. The idea of being in the jackpot for ancient historical reasons was largely became part of the patois of the Baltimore cops.
Well, I'm going to check it out, because I have been unable to reconcile in 56 years of life my dad's use of the term jackpot is a bad thing and jackpot is a good thing when you drop your quarter in the slot machine and pull the arm and you get 3 sevens. So I'm going to check that out immediately.
Yeah, the last few graphs really make it hit home, because that will absolutely reconcile this for you. So I'd recommend it highly.
Perfect.
There is it. Mike Florio every Wednesday joins us at 10 o'clock to talk NFL. Have a great week, man. That's Mike Florio.
Thanks, Mike.
He's immediately hanging up one phone, picking up the other, and it's going to be a radio station in Nashville.
Well, that's happening. He's got so many other things going on at the same time.
We always make fun of it. Like, if the producer can get a "hey, thanks" out of him, it's considered a huge feather in the cap of the producer, because it's always like, you know, one station, next station, next station, next one. It's an entire day. That's why we make fun of Billick, right? Okay, how we doing?
Aha.
Okay. Aha. The dog's barking in the background. Where am I? Was this Chicago? Detroit? Where am I? Okay, fine.
That's amusing.
Cody Decker's next, so buckle up. Baseball talk on the score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
The Bernstein and Rahimi Show. 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Okay, I'm fired up baseball guy. I wish more guys pissed me off when I played.
Cody Decker.
Hey, Cody, why do you not like the Brewers?
Trash organization. The launch angle craze is absolute madness.
Outfielder Cody Decker.
If you don't take advantage of the data, then don't play this game.
Swing and a drive, hit the deep left center. That ball's headed for the wall. It is gone! It's gone! Cody Decker with a game-winning two-run home run.
Baseball analyst Cody Decker.
All right, we put off talking about the White Sox long enough. What was the most glaring issue that stood out to you?
Pitching. The pitching was not good. The bullpen was not good. The bats did not come alive. Quite frankly, they just didn't look good this series. But I do think there were some glaring issues issues that need to be handled. Right now, the White Sox are still young. They can still grow into a championship caliber team as soon as next season. Two playoff appearances in a row with that young crew. I do think they can maybe extend some bullpen arms. You know, Kopech's going to come into his own. I think this team is going in the right direction.
Cody Decker with Bernstein and Rahimi on The Score.
Cody Decker's on Twitter at Decker6. The MLB expert and host of Down the Line with Cody Decker on The Score is presented by the same sponsor as the hotline on which he joins us, Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sportsbook. You can also check him out on Twitch. That is twitch.tv/Chicago670. The Score. Hello, Cody. How are you?
Guys, I am living the dream. How great are these playoff games, by the way? That Dodger game last night, coming back in the eighth. Wow. Man, baseball's awesome.
It is. I wish the games didn't go 4.5 hours, but other than that, it's pretty great. That Dodgers
Lalo,
game was amazing.
What else do you have to do right now other than to watch a 4-hour amazing playoff game? Truthfully, there's nothing better to do right now than
watch
exactly this.
Terrible hockey, and then tonight it's hopefully good basketball.
Hopefully.
let's talk about this. To me, the most impressive thing about that Dodgers game was not just Kenley Jansen, who we've been looking for that version of him for years, but it was that swing by Cody Bellinger, especially after the first two whiffs, because, wow, he went up and got it.
Well, Cody Bellinger, in case you know, we actually talked about this on your guys' show earlier this year, talking about somebody like Chris Bryant, who had to make certain swing adjustments to get on top of the fastball, especially up in the zone, because he was beaten by speed. Cody Bellinger, no different. Cody Bellinger and Christian Yelich have almost followed the exact same path, that they can't catch up to velocity up in the zone. He got a fastball that he was looking for, hunted it, got on time, crushed it, and as you can hear by everybody doing the broadcast, it's amazing, because did you know that Cody Bellinger had a bad season this year? I didn't know that. It's only been brought up every 30 seconds this entire playoffs.
What I loved about that was most big home runs now are in the context of a pitching mistake.
Right.
Where you say he left that one out over the plate, cement mixer slider, that one backed up on him, missed his spot, and it takes away credit to the hitter. That was a hard fastball, 2 inches above the zone. That's not a mistake. That is just an unbelievable swing with amazing anticipation, being higher than high and just telling himself, I am not going to be underneath this. That's what I think is cool about it.
It was an incredible piece of hitting. And like I said, he was hunting that pitch. He was hunting that fastball up, and he had already swung through two fastballs up. It was not a mistake pitch. It was very much purposeful, that pitch. He went up and got it. It was incredibly impressive. And yeah, you can't take anything away from him. That was an incredible piece of hitting. And you can't teach that. You can't really learn that. It was just one of those things that happened, and it was awesome. And it's great to see it happen to a player like Cody Bellinger with the year that he's had, and watching him have some success this October has been very fun to watch.
I think it also stands that we discussed the success Jock Peterson has had in these playoffs, and it's something that we on this show haven't touched on as much, but given his performance and his value to the Braves, it is very important for this team to have him playing as well as he is.
Absolutely. And not to mention, anytime you can bring out a pearl necklace onto the field and look that sweet, which only Jock can do. And Jock's direct quote, what was it? I'm a bad bitch. That's his word. Mm-hmm. That's why he's wearing it. He's the coolest guy in baseball. I love me some Jock Peterson. And we are in full swing in Jocktober. And keep in mind, the guys that are really crushing this October offensively, a lot of the Dodgers, Jock Peterson and Kike Hernandez, all coming from that Dodgers model. It's amazing watching Jock and Kike get away from the Dodgers, get more of an everyday opportunity and see what they really can do.
Yeah, I just wish MLB The Show would put the accent mark over the E and Kike. Just yeah. Personally. I understand, but just please, MLB The Show, do some of us a favor, and just at the very least, if you don't want to call him Enrique, add the accent mark. I don't want home plate umpires to matter too much. Look, Laz Diaz was bad, and we know he's not good at it, and we have, you know, a call here, a call there. You get to the Astros explosion being allowed by a bad call. How is a player, how do you shake off umpiring sometimes, even though you know it can be to blame? How do you make sure you kind of turn that part of your brain off when you have to?
It's not easy. And keep in mind, I've never had an umpire situation affect games the way that these umpires have affected games in the playoffs in deciding games. We saw it happen to the Dodgers-Giants last week. We know that the Dodgers most likely would have won that game, and Scherzer would have gotten the K anyways, but it doesn't matter. The game ended on a check swing that wasn't a swing. And now you're looking at yesterday's game, a completely clear strike three called, not called, that blew up an inning. It happened in the Dodger game with Walker Buehler. He struck out Jock Peterson. Jock ends up getting getting a single leads to a three-run inning. Dodgers lose the lead. So something really desperately needs to be done about this. It's becoming a glaring issue to the point where it's affecting games and outcomes. And like you've mentioned before, Vegas is getting involved with Major League Baseball. You're seeing a lot of gambling taking place. These calls need to be right. Period. And there's a way to do it. And the fact that we haven't gotten there yet is pretty amazing to me, especially with the amount of tech that is currently on the field. There's more radar on that field than there is any airport you've been in. Trust me, they can figure this out technologically.
I agree with you. In our system in this country, when you have money on the table, things tend to get figured out pretty easily. And I hope that's the case with this. But to me, the lesson here isn't just the bad call on what should have been strike three. It's also the do not give the Houston Astros extra outs, even with one strike away, with two outs. Look what happened.
Yeah, and you see what the Astros' glaring hole and issue is right now, and it's pitching. And it's been an issue, actually, for the entire postseason, for everybody. The cumulative postseason ERA is over 7 this year. Last year, it was hovering under 4. So watching the pitching not hold up and everybody's bats just exploding, and yes, the Astros, a team you cannot give extra outs to. You can't even give them extra strikes. Dodgers cannot give them extra outs or strikes. Boston Red Sox, the Braves, all of these teams can absolutely swing it, and you've seen them take advantage of every mistake an umpire has made, and it's changed this entire October.
What did you make of the dispute between Carlos Correa and when he gets struck out and the point to the wrist and making fun of him saying, it's my time? And then Dusty Baker sort of lamenting the fact that this is how it's done. He's not going to get in their way. I can't change the game. He didn't do the full thing Ed Farmer will back in my day. That guy be looking at the sky and the whole thing. That I thought Correa did a really nice job of saying, let us do this. We know what we're doing. We're all cool with it. We all enjoy it. And by the way, it's really entertaining.
It is, and I've talked about it the other day, and I will say it again, that Carlos Correa pimp job is the single greatest thing I have ever watched in a baseball field ever. It was awesome. Awesome. Dropped the bat as if it was a nuisance to him at this point, looked at his dugout, checked his watch that wasn't on his wrist, mm-hmm. pointed at it aggressively, yelled, it's my time, took his time around the bases. I pay Carlos Correa anything he wants. I do not care. Give him ownership of the Yankees. Give him the team. Let him go over to the Bronx and do whatever he wants. That was the coolest thing I've ever watched.
Okay, but can't have a problem when Eduardo Rodriguez does it too, and then Correa doesn't have a problem with it. Okay.
There is no problem with that. You absolutely should point at your watch if you strike out Carlos Correa. If that pitcher wants to have a 10-minute tea party on home plate because he struck me out, I shouldn't have missed the pitch. The end. It's fun. We get to talk about it. It's important that we pull back the curtain in Major League Baseball and stop being so stuffy. Baseball is an old game and it needs to be updated, and that's what we're trying to do. And I desperately want all old people in baseball to shut up.
Amen to that. I do just like the idea of embracing the personalities, too. I wonder if it costs him any money. I doubt it, just because he's so excellent right now this season. I mean, we talked about his WAR being just astronomical, Correa's. But I think one of the things he did that was actually good in this case was the interview he did with the post-game show afterward, where he's able to put that away and say, yeah, here's why we did it. We're having fun with this, too. And the idea of going back and forth, and David Ortiz has some fun with it. Like, there's an element of professionalism in taking the interview after the game. They won, but still owning up to what he's owning up to.
Yeah, you got to own up to your mistakes as much as your successes, as much as anybody. And Carlos Correa, I think, really has got a good head on his shoulders. Whatever team actually picks him up this offseason is absolutely getting a gold mine. He is arguably the best shortstop in baseball. I've actually said before, of the players I've played against my entire career, there's only 3 that I played with or against that I just said, my God, they are not playing the same game as me. And that was Mike Trout, Will Middlebrooks, and Carlos Correa. Those 3 were just on a level of their own. Unfortunately, Will Middlebrooks had the injury then in his career. Mike Trout's obviously the best player who ever lived, and Carlos Correa is not far behind. So it's very cool. But another point on the people who have an issue with all, you know, the pimp jobs and the flair. Listen, it's always old ball players that have an issue with it. It's always people who used to play that, well, in my day and all this. none of us own the game. We borrow the game. It's our job to safeguard the game and pass it off and leave it into a better spot than it was in. When I hear old players saying, well, that's not how it should be done, the game isn't yours anymore. The game doesn't belong to you. It doesn't belong to me. We just had it for a short time. Now it's their game, and let them run the game the way they want. And what the way they want, quite frankly, is awesome, fun, and entertaining. And I want to be entertained when I watch my baseball.
Cody Decker, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Anytime, guys.
Thanks, Cody.
That is Cody Decker on Major League Baseball. Always energetic, and it's always fun to watch him on the Twitch stream as well.
And the coffee.
And he's
I
got
brought my coffee.
What do you have today?
I made this in my Nespresso machine. Shout out to everybody on Twitch who knows it's an old school Stanley Thermos. And all right, it's pumpkin spice. I just couldn't. It's finally fall. I'm sorry.
I actually found my wife left. She made a Virtuo Melosio Nespresso for herself.
I love those because Beth and I stalk each other. We're the same person.
And she left it sitting on the... She like forgot to drink it, or she had to run out or something, because we had kind of a wild day yesterday with things that were happening, moving, getting all the kids where they had to be. So she left it, and I came home, and it had been sitting there for hours, and I drank it, and it was great.
See? I heart Nespresso.
Yeah.
But I also really heart Dunkin', and I also heart Starbucks, and La Colombe. That is my... heart's desire. La Colombe is my jam.
So what's an old school Stanley Thermos?
What do you mean? This is it. This is the old school Stanley Thermos.
I thought it was Thermos brand was the old school, like we used to have when we would go to Bears games.
Yes, Thermos is a brand. Stanley, okay. I guess, is a brand. But like, I just like it because it's the old school Stanley. Keeps things hot for a while.
This could be a thing that there were two brands in the day that were both trying to corner the market.
What I'm asking is maybe Stanley... copyrighted the term thermos and then it just became thermos.
Well, being from where I'm from too, like we tend to call things by the brand name, aka not pop, not soda, but Coke. Like what kind of Coke do you want?
Sure.
That happens. I say soda, which is apparently bad everywhere, I guess. I'm not going to apologize for that one. But yeah, we say Stanley or Stanley Thermos probably, which is probably incorrect, but it is a Stanley and heating beverage receptacle. That seems a bit rough.
I had a bunch of stories lined up sort of in the hopper here for the Midday Midway, but
nope.
I think we just have to celebrate our executive producer. It's his first day, and
yep.
Rick Camp is back, and I think we just need to have an ode to Rick. We haven't produced anything, we haven't thought about it, but just as, you know, just get used to it, settle in, strap it down, that we have a new person in charge of the Bernstein and Rahimi show, and that needs to be, we need give that some room to breathe here next.
Yes!
On the score.
RS is in the jackpot now.
I would touch that immediately.
Dave Yeager,
Dave Yeager, that? If that is.
If they had things like Rick Camp.
Yeah.
Technically, this is the Midday Midway.
But we're
setting it aside today. We're dedicating this segment to celebrating the arrival of our new executive producer.
The midday of the midday, as you like to say. The midway of the midway.
The midway of the midweek. It's Wednesday, so it's all downhill into your weekend from here. But yeah, we made it official, and I have to say, a part of me still feels we owe you an apology for making you wear an uncomfortable shirt to a formal job interview.
Dan's thought about this a lot.
A semi-formal job interview.
I mean, if there's any other sign that I was serious about wanting the gig, I don't know what it is.
I said it. I mean, and not like totally unbuttoned and like sleeves done, like the actual wrist buttons were done, the cuffs were buttoned, and it was pretty much as high as you could go up to the top.
I was only like half a slob, which for me is an accomplishment.
Wait, how are you half a slob? You looked very businessy.
I mean, there's the fact that there's a lot of me to make look businessy that kind of lends to the slob part of it, but you know.
It just means there's a lot of business. Did you ever think about it that way? I'll be your hype man.
Okay.
I'm fine with that. I think Mike Rankin will also take this up through the board.
You know, it's funny thinking about Rick in his shirt, right? He comes into the control room and he's just so, not upset. He's just like, not even uncomfortable. He's just like, man. This isn't right. I need to get out of this. But I will say, for those who think that presentation doesn't matter, look at what Dan Bernstein saying, Rick. He noticed the effort. Go and do everything you can. You know, first impressions, what do they say? It can only happen one time.
Also, Dan knows that I hate dress clothes with a fiery passion.
That's what this is.
Yeah.
Clothes.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Clothes? Well, clothes in general?
No.
What about all your fun t-shirts?
Yeah, you mean the t-shirts that fit me? Yeah. Yeah, those are...
Those are the fun ones. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because pretty much my wardrobe every day, like there are days where like I didn't even know what shirt I was wearing until I got in the car and like thought I spilled water on my shirt, and thankfully I hadn't. I mean, yes, it's water, so it doesn't really matter. And I was like, oh, I'm wearing this shirt. I'm very much the, this is the top shirt. That's what I go with.
And I will say this too, Rick. You know, you and I got here in January of 2020, so I lived a little bit of how the score was operating pre-COVID, and then COVID hit and everything changed. And Rick, you were a casualty, unfortunately. But you came back, you busted your ass, and here you are right now. And the thing about it is when you came back, you were in the same role as what I was. However, yeah, with all of the experience, and I will never forget when you and I were working one of our first Cubs games on the board, and you know what happened with the automation, right? It was playing over the air, and, you know, Cubs games were over the network. A lot of things were happening. So the network was getting Bruce Levine reporting, also CBS Sports Radio, simultaneously. And, you
it
know,
was the everything is, it was the, you know, this is fine.
Okay.
That's pretty much what it was.
Yeah.
Or the Elmo gif, whichever you prefer.
So we had to get through that, but Rick has overcome a lot. And like you guys said already, this is definitely the right fit. I'm looking forward to working with all of you.
I also would say, too, when you mentioned it being the casualty of COVID cutbacks, it's a lesson in not burning bridges. It is a lesson in class and dignity.
Yes.
And how that can actually, in a world where too often no good deed goes unpunished, or you don't think that there's ever a reward, people go through a lot of difficulty in today's labor market in various industries. But persevering and keeping bridges intact does matter. It does.
Even if it may not be quite as fun in the moment.
No question. No.
And I
tell Brett Bielema.
That was one of my favorite parts about your tweet, just announcing your comeback and you knowing exactly how many days it was since you had been let go. And just all the Score listeners being happy that you were back, being excited for you, knowing what that retribution meant. And we saw it with Spiegs earlier last year. And I mm-hmm. think that there's a real appreciation for that. And then just everybody excited who kept texting our show for the last week saying, Campy, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, he's not here yet. Like, wait a few more days.
Well, I also think there needs to be an understanding of you know, people hear the terms executive producer, associate producer, and all that. And they just, you know, they associate a name on the show and what they hear in the air. What happens behind the scenes in that role, and it's something that we take very seriously, is that's the forward face of the show to the rest of the sports world. That when we're calling big guests and major publicists and SIDs and team media relations directors, this is the person who represents us. Whether or not there is a phone call that's followed up on, or how, you know, the tone of some of those discussions. That's our the show says Bernstein and Rahimi. So that's our name on it. But the person who is interacting, representing those names in all of the behind-the-scenes stuff, the way that business is done, the way that's handled, the way those relationships are built is critically important to not just to the show, but to the station elsewhere. And that's why it's a really significant job, because that is a ton of work that you, the listener, something you don't really, I mean, and you can't really understand how much goes in sometimes to getting a guest booked and then having that guest there when that guest was booked, and how many phone calls and how many texts and sometimes favors and quid pro quo arrangements and what that takes. It's not easy, and it matters who does it.
Also, I have to listen to the callers.
Yes.
Well, you can do the abaticola. You punch the button, you pick up the phone, you hold it 6 inches from your ear, and then you just slam the handset a bunch of times.
That is more accurate than anybody will ever know. But I appreciate it. I you know, I'm like Jay in that regard, where fat. But also the fact of having the attention on me is always a little uncomfortable. But like, thank you to Mike for holding down, you know, holding everything down, and honestly, kind of helping me through today, because it's been a minute since I've had to like not run a board for a show. Cause like what I've been doing over on You Better You Bet for the last like month or so was doing both gigs, was EPing and running the board. So not having a board in front of me today is kind of a culture shock in a bit. a bit for me. So I'm kind of, I'm like Ricky Bobby in Talladega Nights. I don't know what to do with my hands.
What do you do with your hands?
Yeah, I really don't know. But like everybody's like outpouring a thank you and everything is much appreciated. So if I haven't made that apparent enough on, you know, on Twitter or wherever, thank you. Because I'm looking forward to get to you know, getting rolling, and you know, there's not much wrong with this show. There's really isn't. Like you look at the numbers, it's like this is what it is at the moment. So I can handle the phone while I'm talking, Mike. Thank you.
That's the thing, right? I'm so locked into doing everything. Okay, I'm sorry.
That's faster than I could ever. If you're on Twitch, so if you're on the Twitch stream, you could just see Mike like scramble, and I thought something wrong was happening. He's diving at me.
Yeah.
But yeah. So thank you so much, and like. This show's doing great. Obviously, numbers that have come out are showing that, and I'm here to not screw it up.
Don't call when Rick's speaking. Sorry, Layla.
No, I love Mike. I need you to talk more anyway. I just enjoy your general personality. So this makes me happy because I just more Mike on the show is a good thing. Rick being on the show is a good thing. The basketball fans are super excited. The I'm Fat fans are satisfied. And we're pretty happy
about
it.
Without eating
too.
A meal.
I was just gonna say, they're never really, I mean. Right, satisfied.
Fair. Also, when do we get the burger? That was the exchange, I thought.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to talk to our guys at Fredo's because now it's the new recipe with it where, you know, it's brisket instead of pulled pork.
Well,
darn. Guess we'll just have to try it again.
I don't know. Yep. Might have to confirm that it's good.
Well, I guess, you know, I can reach out and see if we can, I'll make that sacrifice and see if we can make that happen.
Much obliged.
Oh, we're happy to have you. Thanks to everybody who is excited about it, who listens. That really made my day a lot of the time, just seeing how happy everybody was to hear Rick.
Campy's back and Hub Arcus joins us next. He will take phone calls, 312-644-6767. Oh, we've got some, we have some Bears issues too. We've got more injuries and we've got a potential COVID case. So we'll get into all that next on The Score.
I was going off of the proper address that I was given. I got to about like one turn away and judging by the distance, I was like, okay, I don't need my GPS anymore. Turn it off. I see somebody by the front door. I don't recognize, but you know, it could be
it's a party.
Yeah, it's a party. And the guy looked at me like, who are you? And I was like, oh, well, you know, Chris invited me. And they're like, oh, okay. So then I go in, I put my beer down, you know, introduce myself. The people introduce themselves to me. For me, there were a couple red flags.
What were the red flags?
Well, just that there was nobody that I knew. So I go in and I sit down and these people are very nice. I'm sitting there for about 5 minutes and I'm like, this just seems wrong. So I text Tanny. I'm like, am I at the right place?
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.